are now entering the Rap Haven.
I was thinking how cool it would be for, like, when I'm old and I have kids and grandkids, for them to be able to have, like, oh, these are conversations that, like, Grandpa David had with people. Like, here they are, like, online. Like, let's go listen to them. I feel like that's going to be really cool.
Definitely, definitely, yeah. I definitely subscribe to the belief, like, you know, you do something that you have a passion for, and then you get that out there consistently long enough, and then people end up usually coming around, and then you build up a following, you know. It might take a few months, might take a few years, but keep going. Eventually, you're going to pop off. And who knows? You could be the next Joe Rogan, like the underground Bible scene.
Yeah. Dude, that's why I feel like you should be out there on social media a little bit more, like, because you got a lot of thoughts that are cool and, like, you're good at articulating them, I feel like. Have you ever thought about, like, sharing stuff online?
So I actually like doing poetry. If you want, I could share one with you while we're on the call, but yeah. That's the main way that I usually express myself. I feel like I've been hesitant to do more of, like, this kind of conversation just because it's been hard to find people in my experience who, like, actually know what this stuff is. And then if you do find people, like, there's usually a heavy, like, personal bias to go one way or the other.
Yeah.
But I think, like, what you're doing is really good, and realistically, I think, like, this is something that should be out there more and people would benefit from knowing. But I think I've just been afraid to do it. So I've been thinking of starting a YouTube channel and doing poetry and stuff like that, but I've been scared. So.
Yeah, I feel that, man. But poetry is a really good way to kind of express these kind of things, like, when it comes to, like, spiritual stuff, because sometimes, like, even in, like, the Bible or, like, the way that Jesus taught, like, a lot of it is poetry, because you can't just necessarily, like, say, one, for us as humans to, like, understand things in a way that we can, like, clearly articulate is hard, but that even somebody like Jesus, you know, he talked in parables and he told his disciples, like, there's so much more that I want to tell you, but, like, you can't bear it right now. Like, that's in the Bible. Like, that he wanted to tell them more, but he's like, you guys just can't handle it yet. Like,
yeah, you want the truth? You can't handle it. Jesus.
But so tell me about the book of Judges, like, what you've kind of been picking up from it. I probably have only read this book through one time when I was trying to read through, like, the whole Bible. I didn't finish, but I did get through a good chunk of, like, the first part of the Old Testament. So, and I feel like at that time too, I wasn't really, like, searching for any kind of, like, metaphysical interpretation. So, like, I didn't really absorb much of that. I kind of understand how it fits into, like, the narrative of, like, you know, Israel and how they went to the promised land, but then Joshua died and, you know, they were supposed to follow the commandments of Yahweh, but then they didn't drive out all of the Canaanites. They started mixing with Canaanites, and so, like, the whole book of Judges is, like, God raises up a champion to, like, deliver them, then they, like, repent and they start following Yahweh, but then they stop following Yahweh, and then it's just, like, a vicious cycle, like, over and over and over again. So I kind of got that, like, narrative understanding, but I want to hear, like, what kind of you've been picking up, because you said it's been blowing your mind, so I feel like you got some good stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely been blowing my mind. I feel like, so I like looking at the big picture thing, and I don't know if you're into, like, astrology at all, but I have, like, some Gemini in, like, pretty strong in my chart, and the thing that I got, like, the relevant piece is that Geminis like to look at the big picture. They like to see the whole perspective, and then they like to see kind of like the eagle view, I guess, the bird's eye view. So going into the metaphysical stuff, I think that there's an interesting theory. I think it was Charles Fillmore, the guy who wrote the Metaphysical Bible, that he said that the Bible is a story that is meant to teach humanity how to ascend, essentially, or, like, get to, what was it called? Enlightenment, I guess, is the popular buzzword.
Yeah.
And so I think the cool thing there is with, this one's not really working, but the cool thing there, I think, with Judges in particular, when I was reading, like, the differences, because, you know, like, there's a lot of different names, and there's a lot of different like places that are mentioned, but they're like real places, but they're also mentioned with a with an extra meaning. And I thought what was interesting is kind of like, for example, if you think, what's his name? The one with the hair, Samson.
Samson.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the when he's born, the angel of Jehovah comes, and then it doesn't give you his name in the actual Bible, which I would assume is because you're supposed to know what it is, like back in the day.
Oh, yeah, when it mentions the angel of Yahweh.
Yeah, like it would have been common knowledge which one it is. And then, you know, if you like know enough, I'm not 100% sure if it's like Michael or Gabriel or which
actually,
one.
Actually, if I remember and understand correctly from my studying, it's not supposed to be Michael or Gabriel. Like those other like named angels are like creations that were like created by Yahweh. So they're kind of like beneath Yahweh, so to speak. And then when the Old Testament references like the angel of Yahweh, it's almost like it is Yahweh himself, but also separate at the same time. Like, so kind of like a one of those dualities that doesn't really make sense, where like it is fully Yahweh, like it's the essence of Yahweh. The angel of the Lord communicates Yahweh's will to people, but at the same time, like it's a representation. So it's like it is Yahweh, but it's also like separate because we understand that Yahweh exists like somewhere else.
Right, kind of like the Holy Spirit or something.
Yeah, I think kind of like that. How, you know, Christians have this idea of like the Trinity, where it's like, yeah, Holy Spirit is God, but it's not God the Father. Like, so like it is, but it isn't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's one of those like mysteries beyond mystery type of things. Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was really cool how like the angel of God or the angel of Yahweh comes to Samson. I'm gonna put that one away. but. The angel of Yahweh comes to Samson's parents, his mom, and then she goes and tells the dad basically before she's, you know, before Samson's born. She's like, yeah, like this guy told me like that it's good, like he's going to be a Nazirite and this is what we're supposed to do. And then the dad's all like, well, how are we supposed to raise this, like this savior, you know? So then he like goes back out and they go and they the angel comes again in the field and then they meet. And they're talking, and at that point, the dad doesn't understand that it's an angel. They think it's just like a person, but like they understand that it's like it's a wise messenger. So they're like trying to listen and talk to him. And then later, there's a portion where it says like they saw the angel ascend into heaven in front of their eyes, and they just followed him. So I'm just like imagining this scene of like this couple in the field, and they're just like, wait, what?
just watching this person just ascend up into the sky, like.
Yeah. Oh, this whole time. Okay. I'm glad I was polite. and then the metaphysical interpretation was part of like how you know, Nazirites are like. I thought it was interesting where they like that used to be a tradition where people would like raise their children in the Nazirite fashion, but then once they got to a certain age, they would let them just live their life. Mm-hmm. And then someone who was a Nazirite, like Jesus, is committing their entire life to living that way. And then the main things that were said was like, you know, do not eat any unclean meat, maintain like your cleanliness, like physically and stuff like that. And it was really, like interesting that those are the main things that are being like spoken of as like, that's how you get to God.
Right.
It feels like.
One of the things too that I remember was they weren't even supposed to be around death. So like if there was a funeral for like somebody who died, like they weren't supposed to be around it because they were supposed to totally like separate themselves from death.
Yeah, that's actually like, exactly, and I thought that was really interesting too, that like you're not supposed to touch a dead body, you're not supposed to be around any dead bodies, because back then they weren't just, you know, like the way we have it where it's all hidden like in the background.
No, it was there out in the open. If somebody died, like you saw them carrying their dead body.
Exactly, so I feel like that's really interesting too, because like that's like kind of how later on in the New Testament when Jesus is like preaching and then his mom and his brothers, like his family comes and they're like, hey, your uncle died, we need your help. And he says like, let the dead bury their own dead and stuff like that. And then they're like, oh, your mom and your brothers, like they're here to like talk to you. And then he's like, oh, my family is here, you know, basically. And I thought that was also really interesting to like kind of tie the two together. So I guess the big thing is a lot of the characters, at least according to Charles Fillmore's like interpretation, is that they're like mindsets or their like mental things. So like when we go and we see like the Canaanites, they're like, I'm not sure if I'm getting this wrong or right, but I think they're supposed to be like the base pleasures. Mm-hmm. So like getting pulled into strong drink and good food and like things like that, which like we see nowadays still, like you can, you know, you can see it in the world when people get a lot of money and they have the ability to do so, then they end up falling into luxuries and pleasures and things like that most often.
Right. I totally resonate with that. Like, because the Canaanites in the narrative, right there, God has a promised land that he's trying to bring the Israelites into. But the problem is that there's all these Canaanites that are living there. And so they need to drive out all the Canaanites so that they can take possession of the land and live in, like, you know, God's good promise, whatever, and have blessing and whatnot. And so this idea that, like, as we enter this earth, or maybe it's like as we grow up, but like our minds become full of these like toxic patterns that are kind of, I guess, just stem from like our human nature, where it's like we're greedy, we're lustful, all these things that are going to keep us from living like in God's presence or like in the fullness of just like pure love. And so we need to like drive out all these things from our mind. And so in Judges, the idea, you know, Moses had brought them to the promised land. Joshua helped them drive out Canaanites, but they didn't drive out all of the Canaanites. And then the story of Judges goes on, like, how that became an issue. So I could see how, like, it's talking maybe metaphysically about we have these things we need to get rid of, but when we don't get rid of all of them, like, here are some mindsets that perpetuate. And so you're saying some of the characters by their names and stuff maybe represent some, like, mindsets that we should try to get rid of.
Like, I think like going to the big picture thing with Charles Fillmore again, I think it's like there's a progression path, and it's like, you know, you can't start from baby to master, right? You have to go through like the fool's journey, and like you have to get to the point where like you learn the stages and go through the challenges and then overcome them, and eventually at the end of it you gain this like applicable knowledge, which we call wisdom, right? And then that turns into like a way of living, a way of being. And like what you were saying actually made me think of how there's that one verse that says the sins of the father will be visited upon the children 7 generations. Mm-hmm. And I always found that really interesting, and also like it sounded really unfair the first time I read it, because like, well, I didn't do anything, why is the sins of my dad gonna fall on me? But then it like makes sense, kind of what you're saying, like the human nature aspect. I feel like it goes into, if we want to get into it, like the nature versus nurture thing, where it seems like nowadays science is coming more towards like it's a combination, it's a marriage of both. It's not really one or the other. And that in the same way, it's like, you know, yes, we have that human nature, and all of us have those challenges to a lesser or a greater degree of like, you know, greed, lust, envy, etc., like the 10 commandments, right? Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, there's a level of like, each individual is going to have a specific environment with their specific parent, family, or, you know, lack thereof. And that's going to lead them to have certain thought patterns, certain behavior traits, certain habits that develop over time. And then usually in modern day society, we see people try to justify and just accept where they're at and like kind of stay and cruise, rather than, you know, be like, hey, maybe this isn't like as good as it could be. Maybe there's more to it. And I feel like I've been seeing that a lot, especially in like our generation, where like a lot of people that I know, when we get to having real conversation, it's usually said in a joking format, but they'll end up saying something along the lines of like, yeah, I didn't even expect to live this long.
Yeah.
And like that always catches me off guard, because I'm like, what do you mean? We're living in like the most advanced time in life. We have the most advanced technology, and we have the highest like average lifespan that we've had since biblical times, essentially. Because, you know, if we believe the biblical times, people lived to be multiple hundreds of years old, which I think is still possible if we just understood the secrets of what we were doing and how they were able to do that. But it's just fascinating to me that that's the mindset and that's the outlook that our generation has now. Is like, we don't expect to live very long, so we're gonna try to just get as much like debaucherous stuff going on as we can, and then just get the most out of that pill. But it's like, if you drink from, you know, it's like when you go and like you haven't had water for multiple days, and all you've done is drink like alcohol or soda.
Yeah.
Eventually your body's like, dude, I don't want this anymore. What are you doing to me? And then you like have a few months where like, you know, you consistently like got a good diet, got some, you know, like slight exercise going on, maybe with like some proper hydration. The way that you can feel on a day-to-day basis is so much higher that I feel like it's astounding. But also I think at the same time, no one's going out like preaching this stuff. No one's going out like, I don't know if preach is the right word, but no one's sharing this like good news with everyone else. And then even when they do, there's so much other stuff that's counter to what they're saying that they're just like, well, what science do you have to back that up?
Yeah.
You know, what this do you have? What that do you have? And it's like, bro, if you just studied how statistics work, you'd realize that most statistics are lies and they're very manipulable. And you'd also be able to go and do your research and see like most studies are like funded by specific parties that have specific agendas that are trying to get certain messages out there. Just like if you go back and look at milk and the history
of milk. I was just thinking milk, dude. I was just going to say milk. I was going to go milk and then cigarettes, like tobacco stuff. But yeah, all the milk studies where it's like, you know, milk gives you strong bones, all these things that you can now like refute with real science of like, oh, you don't need milk to build strong bones. There's more calcium in, like, you can get more calcium from several plants than you can like from drinking milk. Like, that's just a lie. But people are now programmed to believe it. And there's almost this like cognitive dissonance with some people, especially from like the previous generation where they were raised with these commercials on TV programs, right? So with these commercials, like, let's just take milk for an example. I can think of several people where if you tried to have a serious conversation about why actually milk doesn't build strong bones, there'd just be this backlash of like, no, like it's a science, it's real. And like they hold on to that opinion, like, I like just afraid to let it go.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of the same vein, that reminds me a lot of like confirmation bias. And like, I'm not sure how familiar the listeners will be with confirmation bias, but essentially it's the idea of like, you believe something and you want it to be right, so you will actively ignore or refute things even if they're more true. And there's a study specifically that comes to mind where there was people, they were given a certain thing that agreed with their point of view, which was already a certain before the trial or the study. And then they were told after that the facts they were given were completely made up and absolutely fictional. And they still stuck to what they thought. Because they're just like, no, I think that makes sense. I don't know. Yeah, you're kidding, right? Yeah. And it's so crazy how like, even if you give them facts that are completely fake, if it agrees with what they say or what they think, then it's going to go ahead and they're going to try to hold on to it.
Oh, for sure, dude. And I know like that works on me too. And so like, I'm very cautious about sharing like facts or like statistics and numbers that I find on the internet without like really trying to figure out if they're real, especially if it confirms something that I believe, because I find that it's so satisfying when you can just Google something and you find a quick like number to back up what you're saying. It's so easy to fall into that trap.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like if I could have it my way, one thing I would add to the public school system is basic psychology.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's such an under-taught and undervalued science that like if people understood the concepts from an early age of like confirmation bias and like statistical manipulation, stuff like that, then they'd be so much better equipped when they got into the real world to be able to make educated decisions, and they wouldn't be able to be swayed so easily.
Yeah.
So,
and I think there are probably more schools, maybe private schools or Montessori type schools moving in that direction. Like, I had like a few like good teachers that maybe talked to us about that kind of stuff. But I mean, when you look at how public school was founded, right? Like, it was basically created to get people ready to be workers in factories, or like, you know, for these people that owned all kinds of like corporations, and they needed workers that would show up and work, you know, 8, 10, 12 hour days. They were capable of doing basic skills. They were good listeners, all that kind of stuff. So like, that's how public school was started. And so I think we still see the remnants of that. And so we need to like kind of pour some new life into it if we want to really like create you know, critical thinking humans that are self-aware, and like how you brought up psychology, like we all have brains and minds, like we should understand how they work, and even like tendencies that we have, how to identify negative patterns, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, 100%. And I think honestly, like when it comes to the school system, like you're spot on. It is exactly, that's how it's been created. Even like the Bell system was created because that's the same type of system they would use to program their workers to know when it's time to work, when it's time to go to the bathroom, when it's time to eat lunch. And I think that's so like mind-blowing. Like if we look back, because like back then it was like 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, we had child labor right here. And then now, since it's not in our current vicinity, we like just totally put it out of mind, out of sight, out of mind, right? But it's like, it's still going, it's still strong and healthy, and it's still supporting, like that's the backbone of the American economy, not the, what we're doing.
Right.
You know?
That's so true. So. Yeah, yeah. The backbone of the American economy, a lot of it doesn't exist here. It exists overseas. And it does oftentimes involve, I mean, I probably don't think about this enough to really put it into perspective, but it involves people that are paid very, very poorly and can't even like have a good quality of life. And like that enables us over here in America to like have the things that we have.
Yeah. And it's just, that's so insane that like, that's still, I mean, I think if we look at the, again, the big picture thing, and this is going to like something referenced from Jordan Peterson, but he mentioned how like the rate of people coming out of poverty to be able to live above the poverty line is increasing so exponentially fast that like it's really astounding. And in the next 5 to 10 years, like if we keep going at this rate, there will, like, poverty will be eradicated. But the news and the media, the things that are pushed in front of people's faces and eyes and their minds, is usually like, oh, death and destruction and rivalry and you know, competition. And if like, and they usually say it's because, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, right? It's going to get more views, it's going to get more clicks, it's clickbait. But I'm like, part of me wonders realistically, like, is it that's what's clickbait, or is it that's what's been fed so that it's the program is triggering? And if we could, you know, produce more positive news and produce more stuff that is like actually building or progressing humanity, that would become the new norm. And then now with that, we could begin to have that be like almost a snowball or domino effect. Because like just the physics of dominoes is like, if you knock over one domino, it can actually knock over the next one, can be 1.5 or 150% of its weight. And then if you go down and down and down and down, like by the 32nd or the 64th domino, you'll be knocking over a domino that's bigger than Mount Everest.
Right.
So that's literally like, you know, one person, two person, three people. And then you go down like 64 people out of, what is it, 9 billion now?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Not a lot
like that.
Of people.
Yeah. yeah. And I think that over the next, like, I don't know how many years, I'm hopeful that like we'll see more of that, because there is some amazing like stuff happening in technology as far as like renewable energy, even like hydroponics, like for growing food, you know, like I think we could get to the point to where like it doesn't matter the climate of like a city, like you can grow in a few stories of like a warehouse, like enough food to feed the entire area. Bitcoin, as you know, like I'm very excited about. Ross Stevens, a guy who talks a lot about Bitcoin, he painted this picture that really resonated with me, where like, you know, Bitcoin mining requires like energy, right? And it's actually, you're like incentivized to find cheap renewable energy to mine Bitcoin. So like you could go to a place out in the middle of the jungle, you know, in the Amazon, and like find a waterfall that our previous struggle, like in this modern era, has been tapping into sources of electricity and moving that power to where people are. Like nobody lives in the Amazon, so nobody's tapping into the like natural energy of these waterfalls because nobody lives there, and you can't transport it cheaply to like America to the power grid, right? That's why we have coal and nuclear power plants. But with Bitcoin, you would actually be incentivized to tap into a waterfall somewhere out there, use it to mine Bitcoin, power this global monetary network. And now that the infrastructure's there, like why not build it? Why not build roads and school and stuff? Because you're already having this profitable source of energy far away. So I feel like as we move forward, like with Bitcoin, we're going to be tapping into these like energy sources that are out there naturally and like start to build up those areas, which is pretty exciting.
And yeah.
I wonder if you... No. I want to hear what you said.
Okay. Well, I mean, since you're talking about Bitcoin, I feel like I don't remember if it was which South American country. I think it was Chile, but they officially adopted it.
El Salvador.
Which one?
El Salvador.
It was in Chile? El Salvador. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for the fact check. El Salvador, they officially adopted it as their currency nationally. So it's like, okay, they're not like, you know, a world power, but the fact that they did that shows that there's clear like backing and happening. So I feel like, so I have a friend, he worked for a company called Falcon X, which was a, like a crypto hedge fund type of thing, startup. Now I think it's in the multi-millions in valuation. They're eventually looking at IPO and stuff. But, what he told me is that seeing the growth, like it's the trend has been like it'll go up, which like we've seen, right? Like now it's at what, 50 something thousand?
Yeah.
And then it started at like less than a dollar. Yeah. And then there was that big boom like 4 or 5 years ago now. And then that's when the whole craze started. And then it dropped, and people were like, oh, it's a bubble, it's gonna blow up. And then it flew back up. So it's like that's supposed to be the trend right now, as far as we've seen historically, where it's, you know, we saw it crash to like 30 something thousand, still like one of the highest valuations ever. Yeah. And then now it's gone back up to 50. And then it's supposed to do like another dip, which, you know, if anyone listening is into crypto, when the dip hit, that's when you buy.
Yeah.
People are selling, that's when you buy. And then it's supposed to blow back up and be over 100K in the next like 2-3 years. And if the trend keeps going the way it is, with like, you know, more games being made, NFTs being created worldwide, things like that, it's just like a whole ecosystem that's self-fueling and self-feeding. And then eventually, you know, like I think also the fact that the US government has like the second largest next to the founder, right, of crypto, like stocked us somewhere, like they're scared, like, you know, like if they didn't think it was real, they wouldn't buy that.
Yeah. I mean, it's coming to disrupt the current money system, right? Like right now, U.S. government, or I guess not the U.S. government, like when you say government, like what does that even refer to? But, you know, the Federal Reserve Bank, the people that are involved in that, and whoever else is like involved in that, and probably get into some like conspiracy theories about who runs the entire world. But, you know, there are people that control the money supply, right? Like they have the power of the money printer. Like they can press print and create new currency. And we've seen that over the past few years. Even with these like coronavirus relief bills, a lot of money gets printed. People felt like, oh, I'm getting, what was it, like $1,800, like sweet. But people weren't aware of how much money these giant corporations were getting, right? And so all that money printing was doing is just making the wealthier and like the asset owners wealthier, and making normal, you know, non-asset owners like me and probably you, like making us poor by like printing all this money. And Bitcoin really, it provides a way out. Like once we get to the point, which like I believe we will, where everybody opts out of these fiat currency systems and just opts in to Bitcoin, then like nobody can print more Bitcoin and take away your money. Like what, like, you know how we trade time for money through work? Like you can't devalue that anymore. Like it's only going to appreciate. So eventually I think Bitcoin will get to a point where it's stable in price, right? Like, and we'll probably use it to buy like everyday goods and stuff. But like to your point, the governments aren't going to be happy about that because they enjoy the power of printing money, I think.
Yeah. I think to your point, like once DeFi really hits and it gets stabilized, it's almost like that's the grounds for the real democracy to happen, because then it won't be manipulable as easily, because you can track, you know, the blockchain and stuff, and you can really see like exactly where everyone's getting what and who's transferring to who. And then I feel like that all combined really leads to a point where it's like the government has to be decentralized, or at least the distribution of power will be a little bit more equalized, even though obviously people who have more Bitcoin will still have more wealth.
Of course, yeah.
And then I think with the ability to create things like NFTs and create more forms of wealth with creativity, I'm hoping to see another increase, which we've already been seeing, in like creativity and people expressing like their humanity in a tangible form, that I feel like would turn into expressions of, you know, like kind of art, and then there's even like, you know, music, songs. Besides that, people are trying to get things like events, like tickets, things like that. If those start going with Bitcoin, like there was a new thing with Twitter where they're like, you can tip your favorite content creators with Bitcoin instantly. So I feel like the more that grows, it's just, it's insane. It's starting to seep into the world. And I feel like this is those, what do they call it, technology, first adopters.
Yep.
Like we're the first adopters. And then as it gets bigger and bigger, eventually it'll be like the next Apple or the next Facebook, where everyone's going to be like, I wish I invested when it was a dollar.
Yeah, yeah. I know. It's like, shoot, if you could have bought Amazon stock in 2001 for less than $10, now it's like, you know, $3,600.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think as you're talking about like people expressing themselves more like authentically, like through creativity, for so long, you know, even throughout human history, like there'd be like these few people here and there who were like Michelangelo, or, you know, people who like were beacons of like creativity, right? But especially after the Industrial Revolution, probably, but our population has gotten so big, but there's so many people that are forced like to work 40 plus hours a week, which like you and I do as well, but like at jobs that they hate for like less money, like not even able to like really pay bills and stuff. How many geniuses, like creative geniuses, or the next like Nikola Teslas, how many of those people are out there potentially that are just trapped by like these conditions of poverty? And we don't get to like tap into them. I think as we move forward and like changing up the money system, maybe as like automation and machines help us do more of like the manual labor, and people are more free to like be people and not have to like work just to live all the time. Like if we found four or five like Nikola Tesla type people out there, like how would that change the world, you know? So I think like moving into the future, like we're going to see some really fast like growth in that area of like creative humans like popping up and doing stuff.
Yeah, definitely. That actually reminds me of there's a Netflix, I think it's a movie, I think it's called like The Power of the Wind or something, and it's this like kid in Africa who he goes to the library because they don't have school, and then he learned how to create a windmill, and then he generated natural power for his village. And then he ended up being able to give them the ability to, like, you know, get water and have wells and things like that, so they didn't have to spend most of their time just surviving. And then they were able to move to the next level, which, like, I think connects to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which, you know, some people say, like, that's not really the, like, what's up anymore.
But the Maslow, some the people say that thing doesn't really,
they don't think it holds up.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think it does make sense to a degree of like, if you don't have survival needs, your brain is like, I need to survive.
Right.
And then once you have those, then you look for like social community needs. And then like, you know, if you have like food, water, shelter, then you want friendship and community and like a partner and like children, things like that. And then once you have those, then usually you get to the point where like, if that's all filled, you want to now contribute back and you want to like, you know, give to charity, start your own. Or like, you know, help the community, whether that's like organizing a, you know, a block party, or organizing like a, you know, birthday party, or, you know, something small, like that's like where it starts. And then it gets bigger and you get galas and you get events and things like that. And then at the all, like the pinnacle is like, you are yourself, and then you're actually like fully actualized and you can go and like live life as a strong, independent individual. And I feel like that's an interesting thought. Because nowadays, it's like finding independent and interdependent relationships is so hard.
Yeah.
Everyone's so codependent, and it's like no one even realizes the damage that that's causing to individuals, much less like their communities and their environments.
Yeah, because obviously, like, of course, we were created to be in community and in relationship, but I think the purest form of that is by truly being an individual and being yourself and being in relationship with another individual, like realizing that you and I are each like, we're from the same source, but we're like unique representations and manifestations of that. And so I think like the ideal relationship would not be for me to like depend on you like emotionally, but like to be fully myself and you be fully yourself, and then we can both like live in true relationship and love.
Yeah, 100%. And to your point, I feel like there's a saying that I really like, that it goes along some lines of like, you can't give what you don't have. So if I don't have full independence, if I don't have emotional stability, if I don't have financial security, you know, it's innately something that we all like intuitively know, because like if you get advice from someone and they're not even like better off than you, or maybe even like, you know, God forbid, below like where you're at, then you're like the natural instinct is to write it off.
Yeah.
Which like that's not always the right thing to do, because they might have that little bit of goal that you really needed, and that's like the thing that's going to tip you over the edge and like help you, because we never know where that perfect idea comes from, right? But that tends to be what people do, and I think that's so interesting. And it's like, it's almost like this game that we play in society, where it's like, I think the, you know, people are like, oh well, I'm here and you're there, so why should I listen to you? But then I think that leads me to the thought of like, the true master is always a student, right? Yeah. And then they learn from everything around them, whether that's the wind on their face or the little child with naive glee, like just laughing at the freaking rock on the ground.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
So,
like, we just need to stay really humble. Like,
that's interesting.
We just need to be humble to like acknowledge that we can learn from anybody and any circumstance. And as you know, yeah, like having kids is like a beautiful part of life, because you get to really experience like another. Well, it's funny, because it's like it's a perspective that we probably had like as kids, but we, you know, forget it. And so we get to like see it play out again in this little human being that, you know, came from us. And there's all that craziness of like them being a part of us. But just getting to like be humble and like, sometimes like let them teach us and let them lead us, you know, like I'm sure like, you know, taking your daughter out for a walk, like I like to take mine for walks around places, just like letting her lead and seeing like what she's drawn to. And like you said, like laughing at a rock, you know, like that's something that they can do. So definitely blessed to have that.
Yeah. I definitely agree. Like one of the biggest things I feel like has been a blessing with having my daughter is just seeing the progression that she's made. And like I feel like as parents, it's really our duty to like help nurture their natural inclinations, but at the same time, like it's like they can't tell us what they want.
Yeah,
so we gotta just be like, here's everything, but in small doses.
Yeah.
Do you like lima beans? No? All right, cool. Do you like grapes? No? All right, cool. Do you like music? Yeah. All right, which instrument? Oh, you don't know what instruments are. Right. I forgot.
Okay, yeah.
You
want
to try the piano? Yeah. So I think that's also like really, really cool to just see like where her natural impulses lie. And then at the same time, I feel like it's reigniting kind of like what you're saying, like we had it as kids and then at some point it disappeared or we forgot, and then kind of seeing like, okay, when she goes around, she's not going with an agenda, she's not going with like, oh, I'm gonna go to this event because I'm gonna network and I'm gonna get 10 business cards and I'm gonna get 3 meetings, like, you know, she's just there, like she's present.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, like that's crazy, like you can just stand there. And like when we go to the park, for example, I'll like take her to the park in her little like car thing and then walk her along. And then when she's ready to get out, she'll start like squirting.
Yeah.
You can tell. And it's like, all right, wait, I gotta get the seatbelt off. Like, I don't know. I know you don't know what a seatbelt is, but like, let me just, all right, cool, we're good. And then like take her out. And then she'll just like instantly just look at the whole thing with these huge eyes and just scan. And I'm like, I wish I knew what you were seeing, because the amount of wonder in your face, like, I want to experience that.
Right. And it's like, are you just seeing the same thing I'm seeing, but it's just more, you know, new and appealing to you? Or like, are you seeing something that I'm not seeing? Like, is there something there that I'm just like tuning out right now?
Yeah. And that's insane that like, you know, I love the fact that you're saying that, like, you know, are they seeing something that we're not? Because like a lot of times in especially Asian culture, elderly people will discount or discredit what younger people say, because they're just like, oh, what do you know? You're just a kid. And I feel like that happens a lot in American culture too, but it's like, nah, like kids came with everything. Kids know everything. They just don't know how to express it.
Yeah.
But like, if we really listen, if we pay attention to like the way they're not just like, because they can't speak yet, right? Like the way that they're living, the way that they're looking, the way that they're like acting, like you can really see like all of this next level, you know, I feel like human development, relational development, mental development. And it's like so interesting to like watch and just be a part of that growth. I feel like it's such a blessing.
Yeah, it is, dude, 100%. Well, I guess that's a good way to end this conversation. You ended it on a perfect note, and I probably got to get back to work anyways.
yeah, same here. But hey, dude, always good to connect. Whenever you do upload this, if this isn't cut out, welcome to the, you know, the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
We settled on the Bible, ended with children.
That's right, bro. Just see where it goes. That's the whole thing about going down the rabbit hole and just never know like where you're going to end up.
Yep, it's always an adventure with David Bernal.
That's right. But keep me posted, dude, on what you're reading and like if you've, you know, any little tidbits that stick out to you, like keep on like texting me with that kind of stuff.
Most definitely, dude. Most definitely.
Cool.
All right, man.
All right, dude.
Much love.
Much love. Peace.